Vista Cottage. Oh, there we go. I preached over there, Family of Faith Church. Pastor Josue Santiago invited me to speak there back in February, and the time had come last week for me to do that. I had a great time at the church. A few of our church family members were there to support. I appreciate that. It's a little different environment than what we have here, if anybody's ever worshipped there. They're Pentecostal. So, they got after it. And worship, man, they get after it. Like this was great here. This was as motive as we get, probably. They take it another level. It was a lot of fun to be over there. Family of Faith Church is celebrating their 62nd year today. This weekend, they're celebrating that. What a legacy of serving the community they've had. They've had schools, food pantries, recovery, reentry programs. They've got a wood shop in their church to train up people on how to do woodworking and have woodworking skills so they can go out and build things. They do amazing things in our community. I actually attended the elementary school that they had from 1988 to 1991. Yeah, graduated from there. The last time I spoke on that stage, I was a nervous sixth grader in a cap and gown, 1991. And I remember just talking, giving my speech and pulling up my little gown thing. And I got it all the way up. And I was and I just dropped the whole thing. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. So that was the last time I spoke there, and then I redeemed myself this time. Nobody remembered it, so that was good. And I stole from myself a sermon that I had preached in here back in February. We've been doing this Jesus Unhinged series from January up to Lent. And then we took an operational pause for Lent and Easter, and now we're rejoining season two of Jesus Unhinged. And what we're doing is working through the book of Mark. And by the end of this, we'll have done 16 weeks in the book of Mark. There's actually 16 chapters. We'll have done almost all of them, or at least stories in almost all of them. We did several in chapter 1, and then I think we're going to skip chapter 7. It's boring. So anyway, I preached last Sunday about Jesus taking us to the other side. Do you remember that sermon from February where Jesus is asleep in the boat, but he promised them that they would go to the other side to do ministry over there? I preached that sermon last week, and this week's passage is very similar to that one, so it's hard for me to remember that you've not heard that sermon for 2 months, or maybe never before heard that sermon. But this week's message comes right on the heels of what Reggie preached last Sunday. Are you guys thankful for Brother Reggie? He's going to be Pastor Reggie before too long. Yeah. Man, I'm so thankful for him. I listened to that sermon in the afternoon. I was like, daggone, I wish I'd been there. That was so good. And I thought, Engage New York doesn't need me anymore. It's so good. Thank you, Reggie. Reggie talked last week about feeding the 5,000, and he said, whatever small thing you have in your hand, give it to Jesus, because he'll be the one who blesses it, breaks it, and then multiplies it. They borrowed a lunch from a little boy and fed maybe 10,000 people with one small lunch. So, Reggie, thank you for preaching that. And today we're going to pick up right where he left off at the feeding of the 5,000. So, I'm just rolling right along here in my notes. Today, we're looking at Mark's version. All of these sermons in Jesus Unhinged have been Mark. We've been going through the Gospel of Mark. Mark's version of Jesus walking on the water. That's the story we're tackling today. And I say it's specific to Mark's version because it appears two other times in the Gospels and it has a different ending. Each one of them has a different ending. We're going to look at them at the end because all of them have something important to say to us. So here's the story. It's Mark chapter 6, verse 45 is where we're starting. Immediately, he made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side. He uses that phrase because they're just throughout the Mark narrative, they're crisscrossing back and forth from one side of the Sea of Galilee to the other. They're just going back and forth. He made them get into the boat and go before him to the other side, to Bethsaida, while he dismissed the crowd. And after he had taken leave of them, he went up to the mountain to pray. He made them get into the boat. I find that interesting because apparently they didn't want to get in the boat. But he made them. Like, you guys got to get in the boat. But I think about the reasons why they might not want to get in the boat. Here's the lineup of Mark chapter 6. First, they're in Nazareth, all right? Actually, I want to show a map. Nazareth is clear down here. Let me use my right there. There's Nazareth. And then Bethsaida, do you see it? Clear up on the other corner of the right top right-hand side. There's no scale here, so I can't tell you, like, it's 50 miles or whatever. It's a long way, all right? It's a long way. They start out in Nazareth. Then, this is Mark chapter 6. All happens in chapter 6. Jesus sends out the 12 on their own. They preach, they heal, they do everything Jesus does, and they go out. Then they find out John the Baptist is beheaded. All right, the news reaches them. They get that news. They all gather back together. They talk about what happened on their little missionary journeys out in the communities. There were so many people around them that they couldn't even get dinner. So Jesus says, come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest. Wouldn't that be the sweetest thing to hear for you? Like, Jesus just comes to you and says, come with me to a quiet place and get some rest. Oh, man, I want Jesus to say that to me. Just come, and we're going to go have a little retreat together. Let's do that. That would be great. So just Jesus and the disciples, so they go. They get in a boat. They find a solitary place, but then what happens? Reggie's sermon last week. There's 5,000 men there, plus all the women and children, and they preach all day long, and they feed them this food, and they carry away 12 baskets full of food. So they get there to their quiet place. How quiet is it with 10,000 people there? Have you ever been to a concert with 10,000 people? It's not quiet. You guys are. Jeez. I'm already used to Family of Faith. They're talking back and woo, yeah, shouting. All right. No offense. All right, so they do that all day. That should have been their R&R. That day should have been their day off. Let's go to a quiet place and rest. There's 5,000 people there that they got to take care of. So now that they're at the end of a long day, they've rowed across that lake that morning. They already rowed across that lake. They could rest, and now here there is no rest, and Jesus wants them to go back while he stays. They're by themselves. They're without Jesus. Jesus made them get in the boat. Can you see why they would not want to get in the boat? Okay. How many times have you had something that you had to do, but you didn't want to do it? Anybody? You had something? What? Every day she's got to go to work. I don't want to go to work. There's chores we don't want to do. There's honey-do lists we don't want to do. There's parties we don't want to go to. There's people we don't want to see. That's par for life. It just happens. It happens. We have things that we don't want to do. 20-some years ago, I told God, I'll do anything for you, God, except children's ministry. Have you ever seen Little Arrows Play Cafe? I thought, geez, God, what are we doing here? This is nuts. I'll confess, I didn't particularly like this word in here, this phrase, when I first read it, because I feel like Jesus won't make you do anything you don't want to do. Like, he's not going to force you to do it. I always want Jesus to say that he has an invitation, and there's a partnership to this, and it will not compel you to do something that you don't want to do. But maybe that's not quite true. Maybe there are things that you go kicking and screaming into, but nonetheless, you are obedient. That's the big word right there, obedience. God, I really don't want to do this thing that you're having me to do, but nonetheless, not my will, but thine. Does that trigger something? Because even Jesus had something he didn't want to do, but in obedience, he went ahead and did it. Actually, when we step out in obedience, even when we don't want to, it usually doesn't end up so bad. It's not so bad. It usually turns out pretty okay. So Jesus makes them get in the boat. And then after they leave, he goes up to the mountain to pray. He works on his up. He gets to have the R&R that the disciples did not get to have. But think about that. He was all day. Here's a little lingo we use around here. Up, in, and out. Okay? So we have up, the upward relationship that we have with God. He was all day with his inward relationship with his disciples, the close-knit group that he had, all day doing what? Outward work of ministry, feeding the 5,000, teaching them. There's more than 5,000, 10,000, 15,000 people there. They are seriously on the out. He's spending his time with the Father in order to have strength for the inner discipleship and outward work of ministry. That's the three dimensions of relationship we all should have. Jesus goes up to pray. Go to that next slide. Jesus goes up to pray to work on his relationship with his heavenly Father so that he has strength for his inward close relationships with the disciples, and then they can step out and do outward works of ministry. We all have those relationships. All of our relationships, whether close, personal relationships or casual outer relationships, should be informed by a powerful upward relationship that we have with Heavenly Father. So Jesus goes to spend time up, doing his up thing. He actually literally goes up the mountain to pray. Verse 47, and when evening came, the boat was out on the sea, and he was alone on the land. And he saw that they were making headway painfully, for the wind was against them. So just kind of picture the scene up there. Like, he's up on this hillside, and there's a whole big lake out there, and he can see a boat out there. He knows which one's his disciples. He's just watching the whole thing. You kind of got that scene? And they were rowing and rowing and rowing because sails were no good because the wind was against them. It would have taken them backwards. So they were rowing. They were working hard. But it says they were making headway painfully. I think it kind of means they were going nowhere fast, right? They're working hard, and they're going nowhere because the wind was against them. Now, he was watching them. He could see them, right, all out there doing their thing. And I envision them stirring up all this water, 12 oars in the water, you know, just stirring up all this water and going nowhere. Doesn't it feel like that sometimes? Man, working hard, going nowhere. Paddling, 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 work hard, not making any progress. I was a young boy, maybe 10, 11, 12 years old or something like that. We have some family that live in Florida. And it's my Uncle Skip. That's his name, Skip. And my Aunt Mickey. That's their names, Mickey and Skip. If you're watching, Aunt Mickey, we love you. He had a boat. And we went to the beach, and it was like, I don't know, they anchor it like off the surf a little bit. So and I was like, I'm going to swim out there to it. And I'm not a particularly strong swimmer, never have been. In those days, I was particularly buoyant as a young man. You know, I was round. And so I was swimming out there, swimming straight out. All right, I'm swimming towards it. Next thing I know, like, I'm swimming towards it this way. And the more I swim, the further I get away from that boat. And I'm like, what is going on? I'm working my tail off here, just swimming, swimming, swimming. And finally, somebody saw me that I was coming out, and I was caught in this current that was taking me the other way. I thought they were leaving me. here it was. I was the one leaving them. And somebody actually had to come with a, what is those round things with the rope? Life preserver, yeah. One of those. And they came and got me, and they took me in and pulled me in, luckily. Because I was working hard and going nowhere. The disciples were working hard, going nowhere fast. They were focused only on themselves. They could only see their problem. We're just going, and there's wind against us. We can't go any further. They could only see what's happening in front of them. What they don't see is Jesus. And when we're stuck in that pattern of working hard, paddling over and over and over, gaining no ground, getting no traction, we're only focused on ourselves. We can't see Jesus in the mess of it. But did you know that Jesus sees you even if you don't see him? Jesus has his eyes on you. We feel like in the midst of our struggle against the wind that Jesus isn't there, that Jesus doesn't care, but the reality is that Jesus sees you. Keenan asked, while we were kind of vamping there, he's like, anybody have a hard week this week? I think we'd all raise our hand to that probably in one fashion or another. At what point this week did you feel lonely, like God wasn't watching over you? At At what point were you working so hard to make a little bit of headway, but the wind was against you, and it just felt like you were alone? But here's what I want to tell you. You're not alone in it. If nothing else, you've got a team of disciples who are paddling right alongside you. We're all in this together, and we're all just rowing away as much as we can. And even though it feels like we're alone, and nobody's paying attention to us, and nobody's there to help us, we're here together with you. And Jesus is watching over you. He sees you. He sees what's happening. His careful, loving eye is looking out for you. Sometimes problems catch us by surprise. The wind just comes. Those storms on the Sea of Galilee, they come up quick. They're a surprise. It's a notorious area for sudden bad storms. You can't help some of the storms that come on in life. You can't help it. Some of them storms you make on your own with bad decisions. But some storms just happen. They're issues beyond your control. You can't help the medical diagnosis. I don't know what this little girl Hannah did to deserve a transfusion. Probably nothing. It just happened. A medical issue happened. You can't make all your decisions for the kids. They have to make their own decisions. You can't control your boss at work. You can't control your employees. I'm sorry, they're not perfect people. You can't force your spouse to love you the way you want to be loved. You can't help it that your tire went flat and the dog pooped on the floor while you're already late for work. You didn't ask for four generations of your grandparents behind you to also be addicts. You didn't ask for that. But in the midst of those storms, Jesus sees you. Jesus sees you struggling through it. Jesus sees you doing your best. So do your best to be obedient to what he's directed you to do. They didn't want to go. He made them get in the boat. And then they worked hard. They struggled hard. I like what Charles Spurgeon has to say about this verse. It's kind of old Englishy. So, like, kind of have to pay attention. It sounds a lot smarter than I am. So you know that this is a quote. I did not write this. It says, the apostolic crew rowed and rowed and rowed and rowed, and it was no fault of theirs that they made no progress, for the wind was contrary to them. The Christian person may make little or no headway, and yet it be no fault of his or hers, for the wind is contrary. Our good Lord will take the will of the deed and reckon our progress not by our apparent advance, but by the hearty intent with which we tug at our oars. He's looking at our heart. What's your intent? Jesus looks at your intent to do good. Even if we aren't making much progress, he sees our efforts. He sees what you're doing. Have you ever gotten that encouraging word from somebody who says, I see you. I see you working hard. I see you doing what you need to do. I know what your struggle is. I want you to hang on to that. Like, Jesus sees your heart and your intent to do good, even when you keep bumping up against the headwind. Hang on to that. I'm going to come back to that at the end. The verse continues on. It says, and about the fourth watch in the night. The fourth watch is the time between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. How many of you love those hours? Yeah, those are the hours. Man, that's where the devil attacks. At 3 a.m. to 6 a.m., I feel like. So here's the thing. It started in the evening. He made them get in the boat in the evening. Now it's sometime between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. That's how much progress they made. Jesus was still just watching. Let's see those boys work. Look at that down there. Fourth watch, 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. Now, if it were me on that boat, I'd be like, come on, guys, let's go back. This is ridiculous. Let's use the wind to just coast right back to where we were, and we can relax. Because this is dumb. We could walk over there faster. I would seriously do that. I would be like, guys, this is no good. But they were persevering in their efforts, so give them credit. And he came to them walking on the sea. That's what it says. Now, this is between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m., the darkest point in the night. He came to them walking on the sea. He meant to pass by them, but when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost and cried out, for they all saw him and were terrified. I don't know anything about the physics of walking on water. I'm not going to try to make sense of it from a logical or scientific perspective. I just believe that he did. He did. He walked on water, and it was a miracle, and there's your Jesus unhinged, all right? That's unhinged. Now, what can we learn from the rest of it? I want to look at that little phrase, he meant to pass by them, because that sounds kind of cruel, doesn't it? Like, you mean you're standing up there watching them struggle from the evening to 3 a.m. in the morning, and now you're just going to walk by? And you mean to walk by? Now, the Greek doesn't say anything about his intention, that meaning to pass by him. You know, that sounds like an intention, like he meant to pass by them. Rather, the Greek says he was about to pass by them. He was just on a stroll, and he almost did, except the disciples saw him off in the distance, and they freaked out because they thought he was a ghost. I would, too. I mean, you've been working this hard. And who walks on water up to that point? Who has walked on water? No one. No one. And since then, has anybody? Maybe the roadrunner. He runs real fast. Goes right over it. Here's what he says. But immediately he spoke to them and said, take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid. And he got into the boat with them, and the wind ceased. In the midst of the storm, Jesus is the one to calm your heart and calm the storm. He did both. Now, he might not always do both. Storms may not always calm, but you can get through a violent storm with a calm heart. This time he said, it is I, don't be afraid, calm your hearts. But when he gets in the boat, it calms the storm as well. And he calmed them with these words, it is I, it is I. Or in the Greek, is interestingly pronounced, I, me. It kind of transliterates nicely, doesn't it, to English? I, me. I am me. Or that word, I, me, is used 146 times in the New Testament. Half the time it's translated as I am. Who is the one who calms the storm? I am. Who's the one who calms your heart? I am. Who is the one who called you out of darkness and into light? I am. Who's the one to lead you out of bondage of slavery to sin? I am. Who is the one to give you a new name, a new identity? I am. Who is this who walks on water, then climbs in the boat with you? His name is I am. We worship him as Jesus. The great I am, we worship him with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength. And they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves and the fishes that Reggie talked about last week. It's all one story, but their hearts were hardened. And in Mark, that's how the story ends. That's it. All done. And you're like, but wait, isn't this the story where Peter gets out of the boat and walks on water? Right? Isn't it? You said, yes, yes, this is the same story. Can I tell you why it's not included in Mark? Because Peter dictated to Mark what to write. Peter wrote this story. Would you include that part if you had done what Peter did? No. So Mark doesn't include it because Peter probably didn't tell him about it. And, oh, by the way, I got out of the water, I got out of the boat and fell and sank. Yeah. But luckily for us, Matthew was not so ashamed to include it, so Matthew rats him out. Matthew chapter 14, 28 through 33, let me read this pretty quickly. And Peter answered him, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. And Jesus said, come. So Peter got out of the boat, he walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. Jesus immediately reached out his hand. He took hold of him, saying to him, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? And when they got in the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Peter concludes his telling in Mark that all their hearts were hardened, but really, according to Matthew, it's just kind of Peter's, because they all worshipped him when he got in the boat, in Matthew. Peter's boldness of faith led him to climb out of the boat in the middle of the storm. Jesus hadn't even calmed the storm yet, but once he was out on it, he started relying on himself. He started looking around. He started realizing, oh, there's a lot going on here. I'm walking on water, and it says he saw the wind, but you can't see wind. When you're on water, you see wind in the form of waves. He saw the waves, and they were pretty big waves, so he became afraid. Remember earlier when Jesus could see the disciples, but the disciples couldn't see him? When you focus only on Jesus and not only on your problems, you can do the same thing Jesus does. You can walk on water. You got to get out of your head. You got to get out of your own way, out of looking at all your challenges, and just look to Jesus, because once you let him in your boat, the storm calms. And in Matthew's telling, once they got in the boat, the storm calms. And then everyone in the boat worshiped Jesus. That's far from Mark's telling of the story, where Peter dictated to him what to say. Everyone's hearts were hardened. But wait, there's more. John has another ending. I'd like to share it with you. John doesn't include Peter's attempt to walk on water. Instead, John concludes it this way. It's John 6:21. "Then they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going." That's kind of crazy. So immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. John doesn't say the storm was calmed. It was never calmed. In John's telling, it just kept going. John's saying there was a greater miracle of teleportation. Like, they just appeared on the other side. It's not the only time it happens in Scripture. They were immediately at their destination. I think that's pretty incredible. They were rowing, working, and going nowhere. And then Jesus gets in the boat, and finally they get to their destination. Sometimes we try to do things on our own too much. We just need to have Jesus join us and finally see the fruit of what we've been struggling for and working for over and over and over. I think Jesus wants us to work, but not in futility. He wants us to have fruit. He wants our work to bear fruit, to have purpose and meaning. Jesus doesn't want to see us spin our wheels and never make progress. Despite all our efforts to grow and make sense of storms, we usually just end up paddling in place until we recognize that it's Jesus who gives us progress. Jesus takes us to our destination. Jesus is the one who brings us the fruit. Jesus is the one who brings life change to get you where he wants you to go. And honestly, what he's looking for is you to have that first step of obedience. Just get in the boat. Just get in the boat and go to the other side. The only thing you can do is be obedient. All you can do is just get in the boat, start paddling, take those necessary steps. Even if you don't want to, take that first step of obedience, and then let I am take over, and he will get you to that destination. Quit fighting the resistance of the wind and the storms against you, and let I am take over. Let I am take you to the other side. Let I am bring the fruit into your life. Try as you might, you can't produce fruit. That's only Jesus' work. He's the one who produces fruit. What Jesus wants to see is an obedient heart. When he observed the disciples, he observed them being obedient and paddling their hearts out. Then he joined them and brought them to the other side. He can do the same for you, but he needs you to take one step. What's that one step he's looking for you to take, maybe this week or today? I have a hunch that he's probably been working on you about something. He's always working on me on something. What's that one step that you can walk through this door or you can knock down this one little domino and all the other little dominoes will go if you would just take that step of obedience and then allow the great I am to work through you. Let's pray. God, we thank you that there's humanity in the scriptures that we can learn from, we can be blessed by, and we can be challenged by. Those disciples, they were just doing what humans do. Well, they got in a boat and they did the thing that they knew to do, and they rode and rode and rode and got nowhere. How much does that feel like our lives in general? We just work so hard and we don't see the kind of fruit in our lives that we want to see. So God, help us to see you walking in unexpected places, and then we allow you to take over, bring the fruit in our lives, bring us to the destination point that you would have us, so we can go in another one and another one and another one. We'll probably never arrive this side of life. Keep us moving forward and journey with us. We thank you, Jesus, for working in our lives.